This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. You're gonna love this transparent interview that I recorded live at Vision 2022. Now, I've got three business coaches and no agenda. Carm Capriotto here. How are you? The pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts. Listen firsthand from these business coaches on why so many business owners are struggling and how they're able to lift them to success. And we talk about marriages, ego, habits, mistakes, and bad reactive pricing. Hey, thanks to our sponsor, Napa, for providing this episode. You know, since its relaunch in 2020, the Napa Auto Care member site has continued to evolve to keep members updated on all the Napa programs, promotions, benefits, and other information that's available to help their business thrive. Now, if you're a Napa Auto Care member, visit member.napaautocare.com to access the member portal. If you're not a Napa Auto Care Center, well, then contact your servicing Napa Auto Parts store to learn more about how to join the Napa family. Hey, welcome back to the Vision 2022 Remarkable Results Radio Podcast Studio. We have always done a podcast since I started with three business coaches. And let's just think, Bill, back to the first one we ever did. I think it was you, Bob Greenwood, and Barry Barrett, right?
I think that was the first one, yes.
And then Barry kind of, you know, went in another direction, and we added, I think, was it Malin?
Malin was with us for one.
We added Malin. And, of course, between COVID and the shutdown and now, we lost Bob Greenwood. Rest his soul. When I'm planning on doing the program here, I just said, I got to do the coaches thing, and who am I going to bring back? So right away, I thought of you, Bill.
Is that good or bad?
It was kind of like, if I don't bring Bill back, I was kind of losing some kind of stride here, some...
Continuity.
It's kind of funny because just last week I was thinking about, I wonder if Carm's going to do anything in Vision. I haven't heard from him.
That was funny. I saw him in the thing. He says, thank God you emailed me because I was worried. Anyway, Bill Haas is here. Cecil Bullitt is here. And Rick White is here. And we'll give all your company names here in a minute. But thank you for coming in. I know you're here because Vision has not only technical training, but a lot of great business management training. And that's what you're here for. You also have booths in the expo. Yeah. As I started to think what this thing is right next to me, it's an expo.
It's the big room with all the stuff.
Rick is going to say a few jokes. Bill is going to give us some wise words of wisdom. And Cecil is going to talk for the whole thing. So we're going to be okay.
I'm going to try to be quiet.
So. No, that's
all right. I don't think I like that label. You can have fun and still have words of wisdom.
You always do. Every time you've ever been on my show, you've always had almost the jovial side of where we need to go.
You have to have fun doing this. How many people take this so serious now? And if you can't poke fun at business and have fun doing it, we got a problem.
That's part of our mission statement. Just, it's got to be fun. It should be. That's what we do for a living. This is what we spend a lot of our life on. It's got to be fun.
We have shop owners that we're coaching and working with. We got to be an example for them.
Business, oh, absolutely.
Our businesses are hard, right? It's a lot of work. But you got to have fun doing it. You got to see the purpose and the passion and the joy, because you got to remind them why they're doing it. How many guys come in and they're miserable and wish they never opened the shop? And
I think they've forgotten why they're there.
Exactly.
From the beginning.
When you put the key in the lock the first time, what did you feel?
It was fun. It was exciting.
I was going to take over the world.
Oh, hell yeah.
I was going to do it better than the
everybody
other guy.
Everybody else, right?
Yeah,
I know so
more
much
money.
More. Yeah.
And I'd have time for myself.
Oh, free time. I bought a business or started a business to have more free time.
Yeah. How long do you think that feeling lasts?
30 seconds?
Not very
the free
long.
Time part? The free time part, about 30 seconds?
I'm not sure about the 30 seconds, but I think the problem is it doesn't last very long.
Well, on the first night, she calls and says, when are you coming over for dinner?
Yeah, why aren't you home yet is what it sounds like.
But you can run a business and not spend 40 hours a week at the business.
No, you don't have to.
You have a great
business. But it's a process, right? You got to go from chief everything officer to chief executive officer.
Yeah.
But the reality is people get stuck, and they get stuck staring at their failures. Instead of learning from them, they let them hold them back.
I think at some point they just lose hope. They think, I've just got myself a bad job.
This is all there is.
This is all I can do.
Yeah.
And yet there are shops out there that are making, 20% off the bottom and having a great life and growing their business and spending time with their families taking vacations, and
so that's just evidence it can be done, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But our purpose is
they can do it, but not me. I'm not that good.
But that's, I think that's one of the things you got to say in your head. You got to say, if somebody else can do it, I can do it. Right. I just have to find out what they know that I don't know.
Yeah, it's all about other people's experience.
Right.
Right. Model what they're doing, the way they're doing it, what they're thinking, how they're doing it, and then do it.
Yeah.
Right. But here's the thing that gets really scary. When you start your own business, and I know we've all been there, you start your own business and you realize there's going to be a pretty big investment in time, right? You're going to be doing everything in the beginning. And your spouse and everything like that, they're okay with it. But at some point, the spouse starts to see the shop as competition, and that's when it's get ugly.
You almost wonder how many marriages have maybe not ended but gone kind of flat because you're just not investing in the person that you married, right? Because you're spending too much time
elsewhere. Well, you guys, you know, you're setting this up, but, you know, when my son was 14 years old and I had the shop and, you know, he's trying to figure out what life is about and what he's going to do, and I'm pushing really hard for start thinking about what you're going to do, and his whole life was football. And one evening, we're driving in the car, and I said, Andy, would you ever consider taking over Dad's shop? And he looked at me at 14 years old, looked at me straight in the eyes and said, Dad, I'd never spend that much time away from my family. That's your wake-up call.
That's a telling lesson, right?
I mean, it really is.
I think we're all creatures of habit. And I think the problem is that we start that business and we know we have to work hard, and we know how to work hard. And so we work hard, but we get in the habit of working hard and not paying attention to some of the other things. You know, there's this great show going on, and there are going to be a lot of people here, but we've got over, 2 million people in this industry, either as technicians or shop owners, and how many thousands are going to be here? Yeah. Not 10.
Yeah.
This is the place where you learn to run a business and have a family and put money in the bottom line at the same time.
But I think part of the problem is you get owners that feel like they should have to figure it out. They got to figure it out themselves. Like, I should be able to do this.
But you can't. You don't know what you don't know.
No, you can only manage or run to the point you've been managed to run, right?
Right.
And what happens is they start the business and they work really hard. And when you were saying that, I was thinking, Cecil, they're working really hard, but they're working hard on the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. They're working on billing the hours and getting the jobs done.
But it's almost the same problem that I have as a coach. I love coaching. I love being in the shop. I love talking to guys and saying, this is what you got to do. I don't run my own business as well because of that, right? I spend too much time there and not enough time in the shop.
Responsibilities to your client is something that I was taking away from this discussion. And we know how we teach that responsibility that we have to the shop's client. How do you look at the responsibility you have? You sign a new client and you say, this is a pretty important job that I have. This person's putting their faith that I can help them turn their business around and make them as independently, you know, wealthy as I possibly can. You suffer with that challenge?
It's huge. It's almost like when I talk about shops, people ask me, well, Cecil, do you have a shop? I said, no, I have 150 of them. When you said, okay, Cecil, we're going to trust you or your business to help us, I'm now a partner with you in a way. I really feel
Definitely.
That. And,
well, you and I had a conversation not too long ago, right? Yeah. And I said to you, I said, man, this is a problem for me. Why do I care more than they do?
Well, and that's the issue that I was, because I really had a problem with this.
Yes.
Where I'm pushing so hard to get them to do something that I know they need to do. But ultimately, I had to learn, in my eyes, I'm not there to help them. I'm there to guide them.
Yeah, it's
them being able to see the path and be willing to take the steps through the path, and I'll help you through it. I'll help you deal with the fears and the doubt and worry and concerns that you have. But ultimately, I'm here to show you the path. It's your decision whether you do it or not. Because as any coach, I'll say something that maybe another coach wouldn't. I've had clients that didn't work out, and it was because they wouldn't take action. They felt like, hey, I'll write a check and that's going to fix my business. And it doesn't.
But you know what almost kills me is that, you know, you have these guys, and when they don't act, you teach them everything that you think they need to know, but they don't act. And then later you find out they went to somebody else. I had somebody the other day come and call me for something, and they were like, hey, Cecil. I said, oh, I haven't seen you in a while. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they're kind of ashamed. You know, oh, geez, I'm working with Bill Haas. He gets me. right? And I'm like, oh, that's fantastic, right? Find somebody that gets you, right? Somebody that will reach you. I can't reach everybody. You can't reach everybody. Bill can't reach everybody. Right. But find somebody that speaks your language that can help you along the path. And it's, I think it's like you earn a little bit of trust, and then you earn a little more, and you earn a little more.
Absolutely.
I have clients right now that if I said, I don't know, if I said, look, you need to do this, they would say, okay.
And they do it.
They don't even think about what it costs or anything. They're just like, I talked to a new guy, actually. He's been watching our stuff online, and I said, man, your website sucks, and you're just not getting returns. You're doing a lot of direct mail and other stuff. And I said, you really need to do this with your site. He's like, okay, done, just... And then you got other guys that have been with you for a long time, or what I think is a long time, you know, 3-4 months, they should be acting, and they're not acting. It's because I think in many parts, they either don't trust themselves or they don't trust you. There's some lack of trust.
They have ownership in the decision that they made, and don't tell them that they made a mistake.
For me, if I'm not making a difference, I walk away.
Yeah,
me right? too. If by 3 months, 4 months, they're not making changes, we have a real... Heart to heart.
I call it a come to Jesus.
Well, I was going to say that too, right? But I didn't know if it would be offensive or not, so yeah. I decided to try to do a little
leave
different.
Leave it to me to do the offensive
thank you.
Part.
Thank you. But I will say, full honesty, full disclosure, I was thinking, how do I say come to Jesus?
We just had a religious moment.
It's pretty easy. It's come to Jesus.
Yeah, come to Jesus. You know, the reality is, though, sometimes people, shop owners, their problems become their identity.
Yeah.
And if you try to take their problems away... It really freaks them out because now they don't know who they are.
Well, and that's where they're comfortable.
They don't like it, and they'll argue with you all day. I'm not comfortable there. No, you're used to being here. This is a comfort factor.
Yes.
You may not like it, but it's comfortable.
Yes. Yeah, there's a comfort in doing the same things over and over, even if I'm not getting the right result. If the result is good enough, there's a comfort to that. I think shop owners, they're like, well, this is what I do. And then there's the unknown that's out there. Like oh my God, this guy's telling me to raise my rate. If I raise my rate,
I'll lose all my customers.
Yeah,
I'm going to go out of business. I said.
And you're not here for that. You're the one telling me to raise my rates, and then I lose all my customers, and then where are you?
I'm cashing your check.
Right,
but I mean, that's what they're processing.
I know, really.
In my initial conversations a lot now, I'm like, okay, so I'm just going to get it off to the side right now. I'm going to tell you to raise your rate. Just be aware. And don't tell me I'm like every other consultant, because if every other consultant is not telling you to raise your rate, they're probably not telling you the right thing. So, yeah. So right. And then now let's cover the rest, right? Let's go to the other stuff.
Hey, Carm here. Now, did you ever think about how meaningful team t-shirts are to your employees? Well, keep listening. Find out. Hey, have you visited the NAPA Auto Care member site lately? Well, since its relaunch in 2020, the NAPA Auto Care member site has continued to evolve to keep members updated on all the NAPA programs, promotions, member benefits, and business building tools to help your business thrive. Some features to the member's site include never miss an update, stay current with notifications and announcements on the homepage, and view the dashboard featuring your shop's financial status. Also, take advantage of cost-saving member exclusive promotions and a faster automated 24/24 peace of mind warranty submission process. Submit re-repair claims directly on the member site and easily check the status there as well. Now, typically, the claim is settled and EFT or credit card payment is sent within 48 hours. Turn searches into a new customer with a referral tracker. Now learn more about how a consumer NAPA online search for your shop can generate new customers at no additional cost to members. Use this popular customer tool to evolve your marketing strategies and to get the most business value. Own more than one NAPA Auto Care? Link all your facilities to one login and access all the facilities to one user. You can also access the Shop NAPA Helm or Pro Office website directly. You can also submit a pro image free look for a sneak peek at how you can co-brand your locally known name with a nationally recognized NAPA brand. Also, submit online ASE certification renewal and test reimbursements. You also get exclusive access to dozens of industry-leading programs and solutions. Now, if you're a NAPA Auto Care member, visit member.napaautocare.com to access the member portal and take advantage of these many member benefits today. Now, if you're not a NAPA Auto Care Center, contact your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store to learn more about how to join the NAPA family.
I once went to a truck shop, like a class A truck shop. And at the time, I wasn't even coaching as a professional thing. I was doing training and implementations on software. So I'm sitting there with them, and I'm going through his stuff. And I'm like, dude, you're losing money. You're losing $5,000 a month. And he goes, yeah, and this is an older gentleman. So I'm sitting having dinner with his him and his wife at their house one night. And I said, how many more months can you keep putting $5,000 a month into the business? And he said about six more months, and his wife actually breaks down and starts crying at the table.
Yeah,
right?
Been there, done that.
So I said, okay, let me take a look, and let's see what we're going to do. So the next day, I go in, and I start running some numbers and some scenarios, and I said, all right, I want you to go up $3 in your labor and 5% on your parts. Just bump your margin 5%
just a little bit,
all the way.
Just a little bit, yeah.
I can't do that. Why? Because my competitors are cheaper. I said, don't care.
But your customers are not coming to you because of, you're cheaper than your competitors.
But
they're coming to you because
of you.
Of something else.
Of you.
But,
yeah.
you and I know that. But yeah. They don't, right? Yeah. So he says to me, I'm going to go out of business. And I looked at him and I smiled kindly.
Yes, you are.
As much as I could.
6 months.
And I said, you said you were going out of business in 6 months anyway.
So what does it matter?
I said, let's go out with a bang.
Yeah.
Well, and 10 years later,
yeah.
He sold the business.
And I'm like,
10 years?
10 years later.
Try it for a month, 30 days. Try it for a week. And if anybody complains, go back to your old pricing. I guarantee you, nobody that wasn't going to complain anyway is going to complain.
No.
They don't know. They don't care. The customer wants a great job. They want all that other stuff. But the price is really, it's not even secondary. It's way further down on the list.
Rick, was he a client for 10 years?
No.
Okay. He never became a client.
No. I wasn't coaching then.
But imagine somebody lasting for 10 years when they thought they had six to get out.
Yeah.
Well, you, but the
six
thing,
months.
Six months. Yes, that's what I meant.
But the thing is, you know, all of us here, Rick and Bill and I, we've worked with, I've got a guy, he's on our booth. You know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, he came to me, and they owed the IRS a bunch of money. He was working with his dad. He was ready to throw it all in. They were doing over $2 million in business and going, you know, $190,000 in debt every year. And here he is, you know, 4 years later. They just did $3.6 million, and he put 18% into the bottom line. And he doesn't work 30 hours a week, and now he has two shops. And that 3.6 was at one shop.
And he paid the IRS back?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, he didn't even owe the IRS as much money as they thought, because when I started looking at their accountant had been double income. They had been doing not the right things in their accounting. So we brought a forensic accountant in, looked at it. We only owed the IRS like $90,000 instead of $300,000. So the thing is that we see these people all the time, and they think that their life is over and they're just stuck in this thing. But man, it can be such a good life if you just make some changes in your habits and what you do.
But here's the painful part of that, right? You've seen them. I've seen them. Let's try to imagine how many are out there that we haven't seen.
Oh, amen.
Oh, yeah. Right? What's the number? 250,000 shops in the United States, depending on who you talk to.
Yeah. So, and add up all the coaches and all the people that they have. And yeah, I bet you there's no more than 4,000 or 5,000, maybe.
We're not even hitting 10% of the – of the probably not even 5% of the –
what do you think, 3,000 shops are in coaching?
Oh, it's hard to say.
Maybe four?
I don't know.
It's probably – you're probably about right. If you added all the different coaches, you know, there's some guys that have five, and there's some companies that have 300.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But it
and
it
some have 1,500.
It wouldn't add up to probably more than 3,000 or 4,000.
Okay. And that's, what, 20% of the industry?
No, not even. Maybe 12.
Okay.
You know, something like that. It's not – it's just not a high number.
And we continue to preach.
What percentage do you think it is?
I said 20% of the industry.
If we got 250,000 shops,
that'd be 40,000 people.
Sorry. Whoa. It's like 3 or 4%.
Yeah.
You're right. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Maybe.
Sorry. The math nerd in me came out.
No. Thank you very much for fixing me. Usually I can pick. Usually I'm good at that. But it was that bourbon that Tracy and I had for lunch.
Was that out? It was that tequila.
But they're supposed to share.
There's also people that are coming to things like this, but they're not involved in Tony's group or a coaching program. And so maybe we're reaching 30,000. And they're the same guys we see every year at Vision or
Apex or whatever. Same faces.
STX, you know. And then there's 200 and let's say there's 200 plus thousand guys out there that are struggling every day. Most of them, not all of them, but the majority, maybe 95, 99%.
Yeah.
They feel like I don't have time to do that. I don't have the money or the time. I mean, are you kidding me? Take some time to listen, to go to something like this and spend a day in a class learning how to do the business?
Yeah, but I think that's even harder now because shops are busy, right?
For the most part.
And there's a shortage of talent. So now you go, am I going to go to a training event? Oh, you really can't go. We're so busy. How do I leave when we're this busy? And I've been having to spend some of my time in the shop because I'm down a tech or I'm down an advisor. And it's like, so I think the problem's really, you know, become exaggerated by people going, yeah, I think they're drawing back a little bit from going to an event because there's so much going on at home.
And they're not charging the right amount. Right? Yeah. They're not charging properly, so they don't have the money to be able to close down.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know about you guys, but I have my clients set up a budget. They set up a separate bank account, and 3% of sales goes into a training account.
Yeah.
If you're going to join one of our programs, the first thing we're going to do is kind of review you financially, make sure that we have a means to pay for that. That might be raising your labor rate $1 an hour. Exactly. It could be, you know, changing your parts matrix or adding a labor matrix that you don't have, something that's going to allow you the money and the time.
Well, and the other thing that we do, too, is we look at a client and they go, well, I've heard of this Vision. I want to go to Vision. And it's like, great, you're going to Vision. So we're taking 3 working days out of the month of March because you're not going to be there to work. You're taking the team to Vision. And so, you know, that's another – it's those things that you have to recognize that you can't count on those days for sales because you're not going to be there to do work.
When I was running my shop, we had a pay system that basically, on holiday weeks, we paid you what you made on the 4 days you were there. So if you did 10 hours worth of work that we could bill, we'd pay you 10 hours for the day you were off. We did the same thing for vacation. You know, we'd take 13 weeks, we'd average it, and this would be your pay. So my guys, when they knew they were going to have a day off, they started, you know, working a little harder, putting a little more in. Our best weeks were holiday weeks. And you go into shops and you go, are you guys, you know, you're working Christmas Eve? Holy crap. I mean, who works on Christmas Eve?
Good for us. I did a couple of great interviews yesterday. One of them, Travis Troy, and one of them, Vinny Lucido. And I know that they both shut the shop down and bring their peoples.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Travis drives with his people, and Vinny pays for the airfare and the whole thing. Trying to make the point that I have every time I've been here and every time I find somebody. I say, going to visit? Yeah. Taking the shop? Yeah. Wow, cool. Closing down? Yes. How about that revenue loss? Never happens, Carm.
Who cares?
Never, never, never. Yeah. Trust me. It just never happens. In fact, we have the best month ever. And so I want to share your budgeting for training. It was you, Cecil.
No, that's Rick.
No, Rick. So Travis will spend $20,000 to bring his people here. Mm-hmm. And Vinny will spend $30,000. Travis is 30 years old, 2 shops, $4 million operation. And he says, our training budget is right about $100,000, Carm. And he said, and it's for the coaching for my shop foreman and all the COO stuff and for me and all the airfare and all the technician training that isn't Vision, but that goes on during the year.
Sure.
Man, well, Travis, how do we clone you and get you in front of the shop owners who just can't realize that the engine can get up the hill?
Most shop owners, they back into their pricing, meaning, like, I don't know what I should charge. I know that the owner where I was working charged this or whatever, and I know that the neighbor charges this. Instead of saying, here's my budget and here's my expenses, and so I have to charge this. Here's what I'm going to pay my people. If I want to get good people today, well, you know, I've got guys paying $50, $60 an hour to really good technicians today. And they don't care because they're charging $180. They're charging $190 effectively. The shop owners, they back into it wrong. They don't do it correctly. And here I am, I shouldn't say that. You know, they don't know how to do it the right way.
What I call it is reactive pricing instead of creative pricing, right? And it really is being able to step back and understand what are the drivers for your pricing model. Having that profit model in place, it's one of the first things we work on with a client is, where's your profit model? And they go,
right?
You know, it's amazing the difference. But, you know, getting back to the clients and stuff and getting them here, I honestly believe that the ones that really need the help are desperate, but there's an ego issue. They're in pain.
It's probably part of it.
But they feel like they should be able to figure it out. Going to a coach or doing something else is admitting failure. And I'm a guy or a man, and I know that's totally sexist because we have very successful women owners out there as well. They have an issue asking for help or seeking help.
Kind of like asking for directions.
Well, that's a guy thing, right?
Right, absolutely. And it's the same, but it's the same.
It is. Right. Well, my wife asked me why I have Siri. So she goes, Rick, you got a male voice on Siri now. I said, yeah, why? She says, why did you do that? And I said, I refuse to have another woman in my life telling me what to do. I said, I'm just not going to do it.
Okay. Let me see. Is this approved by the FCC? Let me see. Is that one of the words, seven words you can't say?
I think I'm good.
No, I think we're okay. Good.
Chris Clodier did an episode with me a couple of weeks ago on Ego is the Enemy.
Right. Yeah.
We talked about his book. And we got so enamored and so engaged in it that the episode went places. I just want to encourage everyone. Episode 717. So if you're listening on your Remarkable Results player, it's probably down. You know, just scan up, look for 717. You must listen to it. Thanks for bringing up the ego thing.
You're welcome.
And one other thing, if you took on me as a client, Carm, I know why you're here. Thanks for taking me on, Bill. What do you really want to make? What are your aspirations and goals? What's going on with the family? You know, how many mouths are we feeding here and all that stuff? And you say, look, I see your financials. I'm not sure they're 100% accurate. You're making about 2 or 3%. How much you want to make? And I say, well, it would be cool if I double it to 5. How about if we pick 12, okay? Let's find a number, a big, big, badass, hairy goal, right? Could you guys recommend to me that I start with 12 and I back all the way up to the margin and the sales in order to get there?
Oh, sure.
Of course, you know, when we start, it's like we want you at 20% because that's the goal that we've set. I think all of us would kind of agree on that as net profit. If you're at 3 and now we want to go to 12, I'm okay with that, right? Go to 12. If that's what makes you comfortable. But by the way, I want you to know, ultimately, we're going to look at 20 down the road because that's where your business ought to be. And it probably needs to be to plan for today, the training, everything else that's got to go on.
That's really it, right? You can't make that jump from that guy that's at 3 or 4% to 20%.
No.
It's baby steps. Well, it's we've got to show you incrementally as we make change, it's going in the right direction. And eventually we'll get there.
But could you give me a sales nut that I need to do every day in order to make 12?
So that's, yes, sure. But that's the deal. That's where every owner needs to start is like, what do I want out of my business? What is that number? What does it look like? And then what kind of people do I want to work with? And I would say both employees and customers. I don't have to work with the customer that comes in and fights with me over price all the time. There's enough people out there that want great service and they want, you know, someone to talk to. I mean, look at the dealerships. People are leaving dealerships in the last 10 years to come to independents as customers because the dealership doesn't give them the level of service that they want, you know. And it's not about the price. It's about the level of service.
You know, and one of the things that I find so interesting, and you can't get – people don't understand this until they experience it, is when you get – them to raise the price and things settle down and, you know, we haven't lost all of our customers, but the customers change. And eventually they say, I like these customers better. It's like, no kidding.
Every person that works for you should have a goal of performance. What does that service advisor need to sell? What does that tech need to complete today?
Yeah.
And that should be based on whatever the company goal is, you know, and obviously there has to be realism. So I can't want to do $10 million in business and have two techs. Not going to work, you know, but that also, if I want to do 10 million, then I could have three shops or, you know, then I can plan for 10 million. It might be 3 years from now, might be 5 years from now. But if I don't ever set any kind of a target or goal, then how do my people know when they're winning?
Are you pushing your clients to reach some pretty heavy goals?
Absolutely. Oh,
yeah. But they got to come up with the goal. And here's the funny part. You ask, and I've really seen this the last year and a half with clients, and I'm saying, okay, what's your goal for next year? And they really start to freak out. They can't figure it out and everything like that. And I said, guys, you're overcomplicating this.
Yeah, it's simple.
Right. It's really simple. What do you want? And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, what do you want personally?
Yeah.
Do you want a $400,000 motorhome?
Yeah.
Let's talk. What do you want? And like I had one shop owner come back to me. He goes, holy crap, you mean I can set the business goals around what I want?
It's my business.
And I said, that's what you're supposed to do.
I get to do what I want to do. It's my business. That's why I got it.
Yeah, but right? They were working for somebody that didn't do that. So no. How would they know?
They wouldn't.
But you know, you bring up a great point. if the guys and the ladies who want to start a shop that are leaving a marginal shop to do this don't have a lot of goals, aspirations, they can't. It would be awfully easy to duplicate the failures that were going on. How many top shops lose their people to start another shop do we know of? Because aren't all those people happy?
I would say very few people leave a top shop.
Yeah, that's my point. Yeah. My point is everybody wants to leave. They may not be happy. They may really sense inside that they can do it better. But a lot of them just want to stop the chaos, and they want to work for themselves. If he could do it, I could do it mentality.
Right. Good shop owners, like, they have a path for their people, and they take great care of their people. So their people are fulfilled. And part of fulfillment is I'm supposed to do 8 hours a day. I'm doing 8 hours a day. I'm good at what I do. And when you go home, you knew you did your 8 hours. You have a goal. You have a target. Hitting those targets creates self satisfaction,
sure.
Right? And if you don't have targets, if it's like when there's a shop with no goals, how does the employee judge whether or not they're doing their job right?
I got a paycheck and no one's yelling at me.
It's not even the paycheck. It's the attitude of the owner, the person that's in charge. And the guy that's not making any money, how's his attitude most days? Right?
Yeah.
So I'm getting beat down. The guy may not even be yelling at me, but I'm getting beat down because I don't have a way to win, and it doesn't look like we're winning because the owner is upset all the time.
But even if we are, if I'm working for you and I know that there's measurements in place, I know I'm being measured, but you never give me the report, you never tell me how I did, that's just as big a problem as not having
Absolutely.
The goal,
you,
right?
You have to go out routinely, like, and say, you had a great day today, man. You did 9 hours worth of billable work. What a
right.
Thank you, right?
Yes.
And so you got a lot of guys, well, I don't want to post productivity because somebody will be upset. Good, because if somebody has really crappy productivity, they should be upset. And you should too. Right. You should be out there going, it's not like going out there and beating the guy to death. It's going out there and going, what's wrong? What's stopping you? How can I help you?
Yeah.
Right? Constantly.
And that's okay because they are really smart people, and they will identify what the problems are.
If you let them.
If you let them, but if you just let them identify the problems and you're not willing to do anything about it,
you're
still going to have problems. Well,
it's worse.
It's
worse.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. What's even worse than that, instead of leaving alone, is when the owner comes over and says, stop doing that, and then walks away.
Yeah.
Because the tech is like, okay, this is all I know. What am I supposed to do? So as owners, we've got to be able to say, hey, instead of this, let's do it this way.
Yeah.
Right? We had an amazing talk the other night. We had a group meeting, and we started talking about accountability to we got a new group going through our orientation. And I had one of the shop owners come up and said, oh, you can't hold people accountable anymore because of the labor market. And I went, that's ridiculous.
You have to hold people accountable because it creates job satisfaction.
But here's the thing. He's thinking, well, I can't. They'll just go someplace else. And I said, well, that's the problem right there. If you're paying him $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 more a year than he could get anywhere else, you got paid health insurance, he's got a four-day work week, he's got retirement, he's got 3 weeks vacation.
Education, a nice place to work, it's heated, air-conditioned.
Amen.
Whatever.
Right? So now you hold him accountable. He'll stay there because he can't get what you're giving him anywhere else. When you're the same as everybody else,
yeah,
that's the problem.
And right. I believe good employees want to be accountable. They literally want, they seek that. I think bad employees are the ones that they don't want to be accountable to anybody for anything.
Absolutely. Most employee issues, in my opinion, are management issues.
They're almost all management issues.
Yeah.
I wrote down this, let's go make the day. And if we had goals and we were sharing productivity numbers and we knew what the nut was for the sales number, maybe we knew the break-even nut, but we had all that as a team because we're sharing, then why not have the spirit inside the place in everybody's role, no matter, you know, office or CTEC, let's go make the day. Yeah. What a cool way to rally.
We felt it was so important in our business. We created a piece of software that was a dashboard that everybody knew every 5 minutes what was going on in the shop and where we were going to end up at the end of the day. That's how important we felt it was. And in our company, we have a dashboard now where everyone can see what's happening in the shop. Yeah. And that's how important it is. Here's what we want from you. Here's why we want it. Here's what you can get from it. Now let's go do it, right? Let's go make that happen.
But do it as a team. You know, one of the things I used to do when I had the shop is that we had a weekly team meeting. last meeting of the month, we sat down and set goals for the next month. We're open this many days. Let's talk about what we're going to do. We would set a pretty aggressive goal for the team. Team would do it. And then I would say, okay, and when we hit that goal, not if.
Here's what we get.
When we hit that goal, how do we want to celebrate? Right? So one time it was, let's go to a NASCAR race. The other time it was, hey, there's this new restaurant, let's go there. And I said, with or without partners? And they said, let's just do it as the group. And I said, okay. And then worst idea ever. I thought it was going to be a lot of fun. Bad idea was they said, can we go do paintball?
Oh, my.
That I should have just brought a t-shirt.
Laser tag.
I should have just brought a t-shirt with a bullseye on it. I came out multicolored. So I had welts for days.
Yeah. Wait a minute, the NBC peacock. Is the tech shortage a blessing for us?
I'm not sure because I think the recovery is the problem. And it may change the industry. It's because
we had the tech shortage before COVID, though.
I don't know if there's this thing. It's like, how do we expect people to come into our industry when there are other more attractive industries that pay more?
Listen, the current top shops that you coach
don't have tech shortages.
Yes. So it was a blessing because we looked at pay, we looked at benefits, we looked at culture. We don't want to lose the people we have. So it was almost like there's that outside force that we don't want to play in or know it exists. So we're going to do everything to retain.
And if you're missing that those other pieces like job satisfaction, because it's not about pay mostly. If your employee's making enough to pay their bills and get by, then it becomes about something else.
It's appreciation. And
you know, Maslow talks about, you know, hierarchy of needs and God and you know, society and all of that. It literally becomes less about pay and more about, do they care about me? Am I winning here? Yeah. Do I feel good about my job?
Am I growing?
Yeah. Right. And the good shop owners, those top shops that we work with, they not only that, but they're starting to draw people from other places because other techs in the area are now calling them and going, I want to work for your shop.
When can I
come to, for the right guys with the right setup, there's no tech shortage.
No tech shortage here because my people want to be here. In fact, the outsiders want to be here.
But it's all about becoming a talent magnet. And it's setting up, I call it the four levers. It's compensation, benefits, conditions, and reputation. You've got to work those four levers to get it so that not only do you have a great team, but they become, you almost deputize your team where they become advocates where like, holy crap, I can't believe they just celebrated this with me or something like that.
And it's a small industry really. And people know, like techs know other techs who talk about their jobs and where they work and what it's like and how they get paid. And the guys that set it up and cover those areas and do a good job at it, the word gets out.
Yeah.
You know, last night somebody was sharing a story with me about they just hired a technician. They're coming to Vision. He always comes to Vision. He always brings the whole team. They come. They are in company shirts. They get three shirts. They get a red one, a light blue, and a dark blue, and they know what shirt to wear on what day. I mean, they're representing the company while they're here, right? So he hires a new tech. He goes out and gets him shirts. He gives him the shirts. You've already heard this story?
It was on a podcast this morning, but go ahead.
Right? And it's like, how incredible. And the only thing that the tech said was, you bought me shirts?
Yeah.
Nobody's ever bought me shirts.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, I think he also said, can I keep them?
I mean, holy smokes, absolutely.
You know, so, you know, that's what people think, oh, you got to throw a lot of money at them. No, you got to do something that lets them know they're appreciated.
Yeah. The bar is so low.
That lets them know they are part of the team. Be inclusive, right? And just
or how about not yelling at them and not losing your cool when something goes sideways?
But I thought, what an amazing story. Can I keep the shirts? I'm like, wow.
If I could do one thing in the industry, just one thing, if I had like the magic wish, I would just make it so nobody ever yelled at anybody.
Exactly.
Anger is not, there's no place for anger in running a good business, right? There's no place for it.
But that's when the owner is personalizing what's going on, like they're doing this to me.
And I get it. It's your business and it's really hard and all of that, but you can't take it out on all the people around you. That's also what kills a few marriages, right?
Well, absolutely. But here's the thing. We all say we want our techs, our team, to be constantly learning new things. Well, if they're constantly learning new things, they're constantly making mistakes. Mistakes are a part of the learning process.
So I always talk about the difference between mistakes and pattern failure. Mistakes are fine. They're great. They need to happen. pattern failure is what I need to look for.
Pattern failures are a choice.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Well, I have a saying, and the saying is we don't make mistakes. We make errors. When we make the same error twice, that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Wanting people to be able to do more, right? That's what this is right out here. You can't do more if you haven't had the training.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at all the incredible training that goes on here this weekend. And then we talk about the tech shortage. Well, to me, the fastest way to solve the tech shortage is train your people so they're capable of doing more things. And you're solving the tech shortage because more work will get done and you'll have people that can do things they haven't been able to do before.
Efficiency creates, you can do more with less. Getting efficient.
Right.
And most of the time when employees are failing, it's because of inefficiencies in the process in the business. It's not necessarily the person. And I think most employees, they come to a point where they're like, this is never going to change. So either they stay and then they underperform forever, or they go somewhere else where they think it's going to be better. We need to be doing better in our own businesses on a day-to-day basis.
But, or we keep them because we're convinced there's nobody else to hire.
Yeah. Right. So we tolerate. And one of the things that I hate is accepting where people are and letting them stay there.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I talk to owners all the time. You are the catalyst to growth in your company. You got to be the example first, and then you've got to set goals and expectations that push and challenge your team. Because I can't tell you, I almost went sideways. I was talking to a guy about potentially coaching him. We're going through his team, and I said, okay, and what other tech do you have? And he tells me his name, and I said, okay, how long has he been with you? He said, 10 years. Well, first he told me he was a C-tech. And then he said he'd been there 10 years. And I just about went sideways. Now, granted, not every technician is going to be that grade A diagnostician. But if I got a guy that's really good at pulling engine transmissions and stuff like that, can I make him better? And the answer is yes, always.
You have to. You can't let people stagnate in your own company or yourself.
No.
And that's about continuous learning and continuous growth.
SSDD is one of the most dangerous mindsets you could ever have in your shop. Same stuff, different day.
This was a great episode. I think it lived up to what we've been producing inside this room for many, many years. What do you think Bob would say?
Oh, he'd be happy.
I think he'd be very happy.
Let's have some wine.
I do miss having a cab with Bob at the bar.
That'll be something
I miss. Cecil Bullard from the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Bill Haas, Haas Performance Consulting.
Thank you.
Rick White, 180 Biz.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.